The Grove of Ashtaroth by John Buchan. Chapter 1. We were sitting around the campfire, some 30 miles north of a place called Taki, when Lawson announced his intention of finding a home. He had spoken little the last day or two, and I had guessed that he had struck a vein of private reflection. I thought it might be a new mine or irrigation scheme, and I was surprised to find that it was a country house. "I don't think I shall go back to England," he said, kicking a sputtering log into place. "I don't see why I should. For business purposes, I am far more useful to the firm in South Africa than in Throgmorton Street. I have no relation left except a third cousin, and I have never cared a rush for living in town. That beastly house of mine in Hill Street will fetch what I gave for it. Isaacson cabled about it the other day, offering for furniture and all. I don't want to go into Parliament, and I hate shooting little birds and tame deer. I am one of those fellows who are born colonial at heart, and I don't see why I shouldn't arrange my life as I please. Besides, for 10 years I have been falling in love with this country, and now I am up to the neck." He flung himself back in the camp chair till the canvas creaked, and looked at me below his eyelids. I remember glancing at the lines of him, and thinking what a fine make of a man he was. In his untanned field boots, breeches, and grey shirt, he looked the born wilderness hunter, though less than 2 months before he had been driving down to the city every morning in the somber regimentals of his class. Being a fair man, he was gloriously tanned, and there was a clear line at his shirt collar to mark the limits of his sunburn. I had first known him years ago, when he was a broker's clerk working on half commission. Then he had gone to South Africa, and soon I heard he was a partner in a mining house which was doing wonders with some gold areas in the north. The next step was his return to London as the new millionaire, young, good-looking, wholesome in mind and body, and much sought after by the mothers of marriageable girls. We played polo together, and hunted a little in the season, but there were signs that he did not propose to become the conventional English gentleman. He refused to buy a place in the country, though half the homes of England were at his disposal. He was a very busy man, he declared, and had not time to be a squire. Besides, every few months he used to rush out to South Africa. I saw that he was restless, for he was always badgering me to go big game hunting with him in some remote part of the earth. There was that in his eyes, too, which marked him out from the ordinary blonde type of our countrymen. They were large and brown and mysterious, and the light of another race was in their odd depths. To hint such a thing would have meant a breach of friendship, for Lawson was very proud of his birth. When he first made his fortune, he had gone to the Heralds to discover his family, and these obliging gentlemen had provided a pedigree. It appeared that he was a scion of the house of Lawson or Loison, an ancient and rather disreputable clan on the Scottish side of the border. He took a shooting in Teviotdale on the strength of it, and used to commit lengthy border ballads to memory. But I had known his father, a financial journalist who never quite succeeded, and I had heard of a grandfather who sold antiques in a back street at Brighton. The latter, I think, had not changed his name, and still frequented the synagogue. The father was a progressive Christian, and the mother had been a blonde Saxon from the Midlands. In my mind there was no doubt, as I caught Lawson's heavy-lidded eyes fixed on me. My friend was of a more ancient race than the Lawsons of the border. "Where are you thinking of looking for your house?" I asked. "In Natal or in the Cape Peninsula? You might get the Fisher's place if you paid a price."
"The Fisher's place be hanged," he said crossly. "I don't want any stuccoed, overgrown Dutch farm. I might as well be at Roehampton as in the Cape."
He got up and walked to the far side of the fire, where a lane ran down through the thorn scrub to a gully of the hills. The moon was silvering the bush of the plains.